Seeing a therapist is an act of self-compassion. Reaching out to a friend who is a mirror of the true self is an act of self-compassion. Loving yourself and saying, I forgive myself, is an act of self-compassion. So it's so many things, but I think just having a contemplative practice of just being mindful helps you to know innately what you need at that time, because the body just knows what we need, and it's tuning into the body, which is so important.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. Today, I am joined by someone whose work has genuinely moved me, David Christian Szabo. David is an internationally accredited mindfulness meditation teacher and author who has this beautiful way of guiding people back to what he calls the river within. Through his live river meditations and contemplative teachings, he leads others into the peace of divine presence, the kind eternal family, the eternal trinity. He's the author of Wow Now Dreaming, and he's currently writing his next transformational book, The Law of Release, which takes readers into a deep dive of intimacy, eternal identity, and the profound act of releasing into the heart of the kind eternal family. David weaves together ancient Christian mysticism with gentle mindfulness to help us rediscover our eternal innocence and remember who we truly are beneath that noise of life. David, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you on here today.
Thank you, Phoebe. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's such a beautiful day to be talking about your mission, which is so simple yet so powerful. You shared that you wanted to help humanity awaken to the eternal present moment and reconnect with that river within, that place where authenticity, peace, and true life flow, which kind of already answers my first question, which I wanted to ask from your perspective. What is the river within? Is that a metaphor, or do we, you know, literally have a river within us?
I think it's both. I actually feel like it's coming back to the Garden of Eden where we came from. Like, we came from a family. So I'm drawing from the biblical narrative here. It's just like we came from a garden, and in the garden was a river. And this river flows from an eternal dimension into the heart through our whole being. And so for me, the river within is rediscovering the source of the river, which is a kind eternal family, the eternal Trinity God, where we came from. And so the river is a flow of our eternal innocence. It's our spirit as well, which is ageless. And so it's many things. And so I just love creating a space for people where through mindfulness, just through the breath or whatever form of mindfulness it is, we just tune in and the river just flows. And that can flow as just an awareness, a knowing. It could be hearing the voice of God. It could just be being in touch with emotions, the stream of consciousness that just flows within, which just translates into an intuitive knowing. And that is the river as well, of just knowing, oh, that's the next direction. Just through being still, the river flows. You understand where you've come from. It's flowing from your source, from God. God in you, it could be your authentic place. And so it's many things, but it's the one thing as well, if you know what I mean.
So when someone is not like connected with themselves, what are some things that show up in their life? How does that manifest so that a person knows that they aren't being fully connected to that river within or eternal source?
I think for me, and looking at my journey before mindfulness, I think it was not being able to accept myself. And so I think it manifests in not being able to accept, first of all, one's emotions. So emotions are a natural thing. And so we're all an eternal child, and we've all come from a family of origin. And so we're all working out our inner children, so to speak. So I think my take on that, just one perspective, is not being able to accept ourselves and the full breadth of our human experience. Mindfulness is all about acceptance. It's also accepting ourselves and our journey and loving our whole story. So I think that's where it really shows up, not loving our whole story. And so our story is not fixed, as in bringing a place to allow all of those narratives, the little kids screaming, to be heard. It's just acceptance, really.
So you teach a lot about rediscovering our eternal innocence. What does innocence mean to you? And how does someone who's experienced life and the roller coaster of life, whether it's deep pain or shame or betrayal, how can someone reclaim their innocence after something, whether it's a significant event or just disappointments in life as they get older?
That's a good one. It's a big question, isn't it? And the quest that we have. And I think the first thing is, and this is a really practical thing, is for people, surround yourself with friends who are a mirror of your true self. People will see our eternal innocence, our spirit, the thing that makes us come alive, and reflect that to us in those really difficult times. So I think that's, and especially now, I mean, we're a generation that, I don't know any other generation that has been called to a time of awakening, to true awareness of even generational trauma like this generation. And COVID really was a kickstart to that in a big way. People had so much time, and I worked with groups and school groups, with men who all of a sudden, you know, their football buddies weren't there on a Friday or a Saturday, and they were stuck at home with themselves. So I just created a space to help people see who they really were, and that was an awesome thing. So I think that's number one. I think number two is having a practice. So we've got the mirrors there, and having friends who can be a mirror of who you really are, so that you don't lose track of who you really are. I think the other thing is having a contemplative practice of stillness, where you can look at yourself with non-judgmental awareness and loving kindness and compassion, so that the narrative softens and you can connect with the river within. And I think that's the thing. It's actually being still long enough and feeling safe to do that, because mindfulness for some people, just classic breathing or whatever, which we call focused awareness on one thing, can be highly triggering for people. Because once you get into mindfulness and you get out of the beta brainwave state, which is trying to sort it out, okay, where are my keys, or what am I going to do today? Once you start getting into the still waters, in those still waters, in the subconscious mind, there are traumas and things. And so it's great to do that being guided, so that with someone who's been trained with trauma sensitivities, so that they can understand the triggers. And so for people like that, I would recommend people go for a walk, just mindful walking if they've got those triggers. In control, your eyes are open, you're not feeling anything that's overwhelming. And yes, so mindful walking's an absolutely fantastic. And you're practicing open awareness, just open your awareness and, oh, look at that tree, isn't it beautiful? What a day. And then just gratitude just flows from that place. But when things do come up, it's then practicing self-compassion. Seeing a therapist is an act of self-compassion. Reaching out to a friend who is a mirror of the true self is an act of self-compassion. Loving yourself and saying, I forgive myself, is an act of self-compassion. So it's so many things. But I think just having a contemplative practice of just being mindful helps you to know innately what you need at that time, because the body just knows what we need, and it's tuning into the body, which is so important. Yeah.
You do really beautiful river meditations. And one of the reasons I wanted to get you onto this show was because I feel, as a Christian in a society that is now a lot more like new age spiritual, I remember feeling a little bit of that, like this, in a caught in between, because I felt like there were things that were true that the spiritual community have a lot of, raise a lot of awareness about, which isn't so taught in the church. And I also think that there's a lot that's biblical people also unaware is actually exists and is already biblically known. And I felt like you bring the two together. So I wanted to delve on that. Firstly, how did you get into river meditations? How did that all come about? Tell me about how you managed to kind of bring the two together.
My life has followed a classic spiritual awakening journey. So I was in the corporate world, and when I was 28, I was running Shell's LPG business in New South Wales. And I ran their gas sales for Shell Australia for a short while, and only a very short while. But yeah, I was doing the deals. I was driving customers' Ferraris. I was driving around in Lamborghinis. They weren't mine, they were customers. I was living large. I was training for the commandos, and then all of a sudden I pushed so hard because I didn't have an off switch, but I totally burnt out. My wife really helped me through that time, and my beautiful friends, and I didn't realize I lost sight of my real value. I was trying to prove something. So just a little bit of background there. I've actually got a picture of myself with a Ferrari. It's quite funny of in my younger days. So I went through that. I taught fly fishing for 7 years as a guide, which was fantastic. And it always ended up in the heart space, because it's impossible to be around a river and not be in the heart space. It just happens, especially over 3 hours. And it came back to, how could I take my kids fly fishing? And I would build the dream. So it led to mindfulness for me. As I was sitting by the river, I connected but to the river within that flowed from a higher place. Okay. So I was aware, and I thought, wow, the fly casting is fun and the fishing, but mindfulness is it. So I started approximating that as something I'd like to do. And then I felt God within say, nudging me to become a mindfulness meditation teacher. And as a Christian, isn't that Buddhism? And I said, God, what about this? And this is a thing. I learned duality in the church. And God said, well, I own the breath, son. I thought, oh, wow. And so I embarked on a mindfulness meditation teacher training course run by a Buddhist monk, and it was interesting. And so, but I became so much more connected to God in that thing, in that space, because my intention and my heart was towards God, the eternal breath, and I was able to go much deeper. So that was part of the journey, getting me there to being a mindfulness meditation teacher. And then a couple of years ago, I did a 7-day water fast, and I'd never done that before. And I don't recommend it to anyone if you haven't done it before. No, it was just an interesting journey. But through that time, the intention was to focus every thought that came up onto love, just loving every thought and softening to every thought. And then literally I'd finished that meditation. You know what it's like, you don't attach to things and all of a sudden what you're looking for comes to you. So I was standing by a waterfall and I felt God, Father, Son, Spirit, kind eternal Father, beloved eternal Son, Christ, and nurturing Holy Spirit, Mama, together say to me, aren't you going to be alive now? And I was avoiding that like the bubonic plague, going live. It was a self-sabotage thing. And in that moment, because I had fasted and I just felt open and I felt so supported within myself from the kind eternal family God, egging me on like my parents, eternal parents. That's a concept, people, we need to get our heads around, God as a family. So I just pressed start, and a whole heap of people said, I wish you would have known. 500 people turned up, you know, over the replay in the course of a few hours. And I thought, oh, okay, let's do it on Tuesday mornings at 7:15 on the Yarra River. And let's just see where it goes. And actually just morphed, and I spend as little time as possible in preparation, so it just flows from the heart space. So I just teach thoughts and contemplative thoughts that I have. And I just, my idea is to it for it to go really deeply into the, that's why I have a field. The field represents the heart. So it's going into the field of people's hearts. And Christ talks about the parable of the sower, where you sow seeds into the field. And then depending on the depth of your intention and how deep it aligns with a kind eternal family, you get a 30-fold expression, a 60 or 100, the full expression of the mind of God in you. So yeah, so it's just been an unfolding journey, and we'll see how it looks next year again. So yeah, I'm having a blast, and people get healed, especially as people let go. People have financial miracles. I've had people, I had a psychologist reach out to me and say, thank you so much. One of my clients was healed of trauma. And then with my book, I even use my, it's not kicking it up, but I even use my book and some of the meditations in my book, and my meditations actually healed me. they were actually places where I was in the heart space. And it's part of it is the journey that I had through of accepting unconditional, eternal love into the heart space and journeying through everything I went through together and loving my story, which comes back to your first question with people who are going through that. It's journeying together. It's with a team. It's an eternal team, but also the people who are assigned to you to walk alongside of your life for seasons. It's reaching out. So, yeah.
You've spoken a lot about hearing from God, being like really supported, even egged on to do these riverside meditations. For those that are listening that don't know what it's like to hear from God, what does that appear like? How does that manifest? And how does someone start to connect with whatever they call is their the divine infinity or whatever it is? How do they connect to that?
Well, the first way to connect is understand your resistance to God. And this is a big one here. And I wrote it in my notes. So I knew this would come up. God trauma. And I wish people could see that, but it's, oh yeah, here we go. Wow, now dreaming. So I have it in all kinds of bookshops. I've got it in New Age bookshops. I've got it all over the place. Candy stores in the front, because it's all about the eternal dream, the river of life that flows. So first of all, I would say, acknowledge your body as a temple of God. That's number one. The body is actually a temple. You exist because a quantum physics has taught us through the observer effect that nothing exists without being observed. So our unique form is a fractal of God. So we're created in the image of God, not as God, but as an image and as an object of love and as an eternal child. And so the first thing is to just become aware of that. And I'm also aware, as we talk, that not everyone's going to agree with my point of view. So I'm talking about this from a Christological point of view. You know, but I believe that Christ is an eternal son. And so when I talk about God as a family, it softens it. It's not this blob in the Christian universe. It's where we all came from. And so it's even beyond Christianity, even though a lot of it is, I align with it, but it's just like, it predates even Christianity. We've come from somewhere, from an Eden, Garden of Eden type thing. So that's number one, realize you're an eternal child and then understand the triggers around God you have. Because if you had parents who were really harsh, if you had a harsh father or a harsh mother, you're going to see God that way. It just happens. Yeah. And so that's when mindfulness has been so transformational for me. It's helped me softened with non-judgmental awareness around God and things. And it builds, so science has shown that mindfulness practice of loving kindness meditation over 9 weeks is transformational for helping you build your resilience. Yep. And it kicks in after 3 weeks. So you've got to hang in there for 3 weeks. A daily practice of 20 minutes has been shown to actually noticeably increase capacity. So it's sitting with that, of being aware of God trauma.
So what is God trauma?
Well, God trauma is, where was God when my dad was dying of cancer? Where was God when my marriage fell apart? Where was God? Why God? Why? And so even atheists have a whinge at God when things don't, you know what I mean? And atheists are very lonely at death. You know, I've heard, you know, it's like all of a sudden, oh my gosh, maybe there is a God, you know what I mean? But yeah, God trauma is a very, very real thing. And so it's taking that non-judgmental awareness into the God space and having the courage. And I just want to speak to people to have courage in this podcast to face God.
If someone has experienced that really tragic loss, or even seeing the way the world is, natural tragedies happening and like really peaceful countries that love God, like the Philippines, for example. I know this has shifted a little bit into the God topic, but like, how would you explain that to someone that just believes that God doesn't exist or that he doesn't look out for us when those things happen?
I think it comes into human choice. So I'm going back to the Garden of Eden as a very right at the base of humanity, really. So there are two trees. One's the tree of life and one's the tree of knowledge and good and evil. And the tree of life is seeing things joined to life, joined relationally to God. And the tree of knowledge and good and evil is trying to work it out. It's doing it yourself. And so I'd say, first of all, it's going on a journey together with God and having the courage to ask those questions of God directly. Otherwise, you're getting a secondhand view of whoever you are. And this, you go on Instagram, you go on Reels. There's just so much out there, you know, on everything, relationships, everything, yada, yada, yada. And I would say, actually go on a journey relationally with God. And I'm actually happy to do a meditation in a minute, if you like, for people. But there'll be a few links. I believe I'm editing a meditation on eternal innocence. And the other one is the seat of rest, allowing God to sit in the seat of your life and doing life together. So I think it's, first of all, turning in and making space for a dialogue for God together to let the river of life flow from within and intuitively go on that journey together. I think that's really important. Yeah.
But what if people find that they don't hear from God or that they feel like they're speaking into thin air? How are some ways that they can hear back from in this eternal Father that you talk about?
First of all, it's understanding you're going to hear God differently. So some people have got vivid imagination like me, and I can actually see spiritually quite clearly. And not everyone has that for various reasons. So first of all, do you see? Do you know? Do you feel? Yeah. Do you hear? And so I could close my eyes, and because I've trained myself, I could close my eyes and I say, God, how do you feel about me right now? It's like, then, so you breathe and you just wait. It's as simple as that sometimes. But sitting there longer enough and lingering and not stopping, and I will guarantee for people, if you send an intention out there like a whale, this is deep calling to deep. So the waters within you calling to the eternal waters, and a whale can be heard from so far away, you'll hear a sounding back. But it's sitting there long enough for that sounding back to take place in non-judgmental awareness. Because in that non-judgmental awareness, you are softening. So rather than, oh, I never hear God, okay, I'm going to try again. I love myself, this trauma there. I'm on a journey here. So it's softening and having the courage to ask God a question. It might just be asking God a question and then trusting. You might not hear it, but a friend might give you an answer and you start joining the dots, because Jesus is in everything. Jesus is in this glass of water. Jesus is in my book. He's in a pen. Jesus makes everything buzz. So he's the all in all. So it's trusting that your life that Jesus is in is going to start talking to you. And so that's practicing non-judgmental awareness and not judging God. Because think of a relationship, right? So I can't force anyone to respond in a way, okay, God, you're going to tell me this, 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 and this. God's got a unique personality. God's a person. And so he's going to respond in the way that is meaningful to him.
I totally agree. I think I love that you talk about just changing up the expectation of how he's going to show up. So if you aren't, for example, words and sounds might not be really strong for one person, but they might have a vivid imagination. But if you're waiting to hear his voice and to hear him talk to you in like a sound, when you might better respond in vivid imagination and visions, they're not going to find anything, because that might not be the way you receive or the way you respond. I also love what you say about connecting the dots between people, because I do think that a lot of messages from the divine do come through the way we interpret what we are reading and what we hear from people. And there's something so clever and deep within. We've talked about on this show, we've talked about the brain, the heart, and the gut and the neurons, but there is something so deep where we can understand and comprehend in a way that we can't explain. And it's like a gut feel. And sometimes things will just jump at you from what you read and what you hear from other people. And it's like that gut feel that doesn't just come from nothing. There is something there. So yeah, I love that.
I'd just love to offer a little clue. If you're asking God a direct question and you hear back, God often sounds when he answers back like it's your own voice. I want to know that as well. Listen to that. And then feel it, and then go on a relational journey and you will know the truth. Just ask Christ. And it's like a whale sounding out into the waters. It's just like a whale sounding out to its mother, right? You know, and it's a deep primordial groan. It's a similar thing like the waters and us calling out to the waters in the eternal river flowing. And it sounds back. And all our lives, I think the purpose of life to me is to learn to flow into God's sea. It's a river that's clear, but it comes into this salty sea. And it, even when it comes into the sea, it takes a while to calibrate to the altness of the sea and to diffuse into the whole city. So it's just learning to intuitively join the dots and sit in that space long enough in non-judgmental awareness and just be aware of all the triggers and traumas around that, and lovingly, and sometimes it's even finding a friend to process that with as well. Or we can have leadership abuse with it from a church. You know, so many different things. So it's very important that you face that with your capacity.
You talk about mindfulness so beautifully and you share it with people on your YouTube channel so beautifully. And I think a lot of people have thought that mindfulness is often something that's solo, it's quiet practice. Yet your work ties it into something profoundly relational, connecting with the eternal Trinity, for example. So I wanted to know, how do you see mindfulness and mysticism working together in transforming the way we live or the way we love and the way we experience life?
For me, it creates a space. I think what separates humans from other species is metacognition. So the ability to observe our thoughts and our feelings, which is known as, many call it the stream of consciousness, the river that flows. And there are different flows as a soul flow, there's a spirit flow. Yeah, so I think mindfulness creates a space for metacognition and spirit cognition, and I call it divine coherence. It's lingering long enough. You know what it's like? The mind's all over the place. And sometimes, you know, in the Bible, and there's a book of the Bible called Hebrews, and Hebrews chapter 4, it talks about entering into rest and how our struggle is to enter into rest. That's the only struggle. And that struggle is the place, rest is a place of quiet, faith, trust that it's going to be okay, that God's got my back, Jesus has done it all, you know. So I think mindfulness provides a space to, a tool to sit with the divine long enough, the kind eternal family long enough to listen to their beautiful whispers and sit in that place and trust. And sometimes it takes a while because the mind does this and then it does this. And that can be 20 minutes to find the sweet spot, and then you're in. And then you linger, and that's where the magic happens. You know, that's where you get the downloads and the things flow and the river starts flowing. And so mysticism is simply through contemplation, sitting in a place, being able to observe divine things. That's all mysticism is. So mindfulness and mysticism just go together. So for me, Christ is the ultimate reality. And that's not from a religious point of view. That's from everyone's point of view. You know, we were created from a family. So I think the future is very bright because we as a species are now becoming much more aware and being able to sit with things and just even being aware of trauma and triggers. And mindfulness just provides a place for that metacognition and awareness to happen.
I want to ask about walking meditation. How does that even work? I have heard about walking meditations for years and I just don't understand how someone can walk and meditate at the same time, because in my mind I've always thought that meditation is where you don't think about anything and your eyes are closed or you focus on the one spot. But how can you be meditating if you are walking? Are they listening to something in particular? Are they thinking something in particular? Does that even exist? Is it even possible?
Well, for a lot of people, walking meditation is their meditation practice. And some people can have very, very powerful experiences consciously just walking.
What's the difference between someone who's listening to music or walking with their dog, no headphones on maybe, and a walking meditation then?
No difference in the body, because the brainwave state associated with logic and reason, which is called the beta mind, which is also the conscious mind, 95% of your awareness is unconscious, by the way. I love playing Van Halen on my guitar, right? So one of the things I do, I love playing shred on a guitar. I'm a child of the 80s, right? That is something I love and I get lost in it. I'm working on Jump at the moment, the solo, right? I haven't mastered it. I love things I can't master because it's just this wonder of, wow, isn't that amazing? I love fast guitars. I love things I'll never fully master. That's just me. So for me, when I'm lost in that, I'm just more creative. I mean, I've come alive. I'm just seeing myself on the street. I'm just come alive talking about it. So it could be looking at a child. It could be walking your dog. It's a thing that you go out of the beta brainwave state into the alpha brainwave state, which is like a child sitting on a rock. And all of a sudden, you are contemplating your stream of consciousness. So doing anything that you love, where time is not a factor, especially, you're out of time. And all of a sudden, you almost go out of space-time into this eternal time continuum where time stands still and time doesn't matter. And that's where the flow of life comes to you.
I feel like maybe I'm almost expecting there's like some kind of like rules, and that's why I'm not understanding it, because I'm so used to growing up with a mother who said, you must put your hands like this, you must cross your legs like this, and you must breathe like this. And so you're now taking me out of this, like, I'm thinking, well, was I meditating this morning when I was walking my dog? Or was I meditating the moment my like thoughts started to wander? Or was I not, just because I had headphones in and I was listening to music? And yeah, it's interesting because it sounds like it's more of a state of mind that just happens, and you don't necessarily consciously do a walking meditation. It just kind of happens. Or perhaps you take away all distractions and that's what's considered a walking meditation.
Have you ever gone for a walk and with your dog and all of a sudden ideas flow to you?
Yeah.
You just did a walking meditation.
Yeah.
And I think, I think mindfulness is actually awareness of resistance. That's actually the work of mindfulness. It's just being aware of resistance at its core. Where am I resisting just being here right now? A walking meditation is one thing. It could be anything. It could be watching a movie. It could be just, I love fly fishing, so I get loads of downloads of fly fishing.
Or so driving.
100%, especially if it's a car you really love. So I've got a 2003 Hilux, and I intentionally got it. I used to see it in dreams. And even it was supernatural, even how I got it. I couldn't find one between here and 2,000 kilometers away. And I couldn't find the exact model. And I literally found myself falling back into grace and just letting it go. And my friend walks in 10 minutes later, said, what sort of car are you looking for, Dave? Exactly. Oh, my sister-in-law's selling one. 10 minutes later, I turned the key. I had joy. And it's an agricultural tractor. But I get so much joy driving it. You have to really drive the manual. And I get downloads. I call a quantum. That's what I call the car, quantum. And so, yeah, driving is absolutely, if it's something you love. So I'll just get back to the walking meditation, Phoebe, if I could. So with a walking meditation, it's first of all not trying to define it too much. But for the number one thing is safety. Number one thing is walking in a very safe place where if you'll contemplate, you're just safe. So because it's difficult to be present and not feel safe. So that's just the number one thing. And so what I recommend people is to stand, and whether you close your eyes or open your eyes, again, it comes down to safety. It's sense into your body and just breathe and just take time just to set an intention, just to go with the flow. And you can count steps. Like for some people, they like counting steps. So 1, 2, 3, 4. It could just be being aware of a certain body part as you're walking, or just walking with no agenda and just to be practicing open awareness. And in open awareness, look how beautiful that tree is over there. Oh, like, you know, you're on this gray track. And all of a sudden there's this beautiful color and you're seeing juxtaposed against the gray, beautiful color. So even in normal life, there is beauty, you know, and it's just joining the dots and it's allowing yourself to be aware of your thoughts and just not judging it. I think that's the thing, not to judge it, just to allow the experience to unfold, And so, and it's going on a journey. And, That's as simple as that. There's no rocket science, but it's becoming aware of, why am I trying to force this walking meditation as well? Because awareness of resistance is actually mindfulness as well. Being aware of the resistance to just being present and accepting it and loving that is mindfulness as well.
I love that, because I think not everyone has the time to take 20 minutes out of their morning to sit and be quiet and go for that walk, to walk the dogs and get their breakfast for their kids and everything ready and all of that. That not everybody has that luxury. So it sounds like a lot of people unknowingly are experiencing a walking meditation already, because that's how ideas drop. And I know for me, we actually started a new practice today with my team where we do walking meetings, and everyone lit up, including their kids that joined. And I think that, yeah, there is something really special about being out in nature and moving. You are bringing in those elements together: meditation, mindfulness, connecting with our Eternal Father, and also beautiful river meditation, which I would love you to link us up to so we can pop it into the show notes. And lastly, I wanted to talk about your book. I thought it'd be a great way to wrap up this episode by just talking about, like, what inspired you to write your book? How did you write your book? And who is it for? What's it about?
Really appreciate it. Wow. So...
Because I know you love your book. That smile that comes up when you share your book with people, there is something really special about this book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been an amazing journey. I think what I realize is, ever since I was a child, I was this amazing daydreamer. Now, not everyone's like this, but up until the age of about 8, I used to see angels with my eyes, and I used to see the glow around people and certain things. I'd go to church, I'd see lights, I'd see things. Once in a while, I still do that. And I don't share that too much, but I think sometimes, if only people saw what I'm seeing right now, but that's just me. And so I realized as a child, I noticed this, especially in my teen years. My beautiful dad died 2 years ago from cancer, and I helped nurse him with mum at his house right till the end. And that was a beautiful time. Dad loved me in the best way he could, and he didn't always know how to connect with me. And so I realized he just didn't know what I really wanted. And I'd just dream about things with God about what I really wanted. And I was really specific, like a cap this way or something like this. And things would turn up. And I realized that my dreaming was actually a prayer, and that I had a really good God who wanted to give me things. And so I became more intentional, and I started studying Joe Dispenza and things like that. And I started joining the dots with what the Bible was saying with science. And I thought, okay, what Jesus was talking about, he was ahead of his time. He was in eternal time, you know? And so I've got a futurist friend called Fiorella Giordano. We've chatted before, and I do her workshops and things like that. And she was talking about once thinking of something in the future that you want, or a reality, and bringing it into the now. And something in me, the river within, resonated with that. And 2 weeks later, I'm just walking along the river, and out of the blue, the words, wow, now, fell into me. And the feeling, or the emotion of creation that God feels. That's the only way I can describe it. And I call it infused knowledge, where it was like a download that came to me. And I've had other downloads, but this I knew was a technology, and it was unique to my relational journey with God. And so I would start dreaming about something and just say, wow, now. Now, wow, now means nothing, but it's a relational thing for me, where I know it's not a blab it and grab it type of thing, or some cheap, cheesy thing. It meant something to me, where there's a good God who's created everything. And so the realm of the quantum field responds to that. And the realm of eternity comes into the quantum field as well. And they work together to bring me the object of my desire that I've dreamed up with God. It's almost like I've created a technology or a book to help people connect with God dreaming in them. Remember, we were talked about remembering that we are a temple. So the thoughts you get when you're walking along a river, or playing with your kids, or walking with your team, and the kids are there, and there's this joy, the river is flowing, And that's from eternity. You know what I mean? Realizing that. So I think I've just created a book all around that. And I didn't realize I unintentionally created a book that addresses God trauma, but gives people a very gentle way of facing that and going on a journey with God together into the future. So not being separated, because religion creates a lot of separation. And even mindfulness can be forced rather than just, it can be a religion in itself. You're religious about mindfulness rather than this is. So I walk my life knowing that God is in my whole story, even the bits I don't like. I've created a book that enables people to very gently face that. One of the chapters here that I speak often is a celestial shift hidden in plain sight. So something I'd love to offer to people is next time you see a child being treated beautifully by their parents, especially the dad, but it's mother too, you're looking at eternity at work. Never in any other generation have parents been so conscious treating their children with a level of care like I've seen it. And I'm no doubt you as well. You are seeing eternity at work. Take note and put yourself in that child's picture and imagine those parents as if they were God and see yourself reflected in the eyes. It's really powerful. It's a celestial shift hidden in plain sight. God is wanting to be experienced in a new way, and he is almost like we are reparenting ourselves in that awareness. So there's one little thing, and I love this reflection that I've got. Here we go, an activation. So this is the reflection from that chapter. Next time you see a child being treated kindly by its parents, stop and observe. See how the child is loved for who she is. Wow. I still find that emotional. Sorry. Oh.
That's beautiful.
You don't have to earn love. In the same way, you are a deeply valued eternal son or daughter with a spirit far older than your biological age. You are and always have been. I didn't plan on this. Gets me every time. Sorry. Am I the first crier on your show?
Potentially, but I think this is a beautiful moment that's very, very sacred as well.
I'll keep reading. You are and always have been loved. You do not need to earn God's love. It is yours. You are God's child. So this one last activation, it's real short. And I have people from all around the world saying thank you. That's the one that starts the heart opening. So a simple activation, and for all your listeners, Phoebe as well. This is for all you guys from me, from my pen. And I got this by the river, by the way. I was walking by the river and this all flowed to me. And I went back and I wrote it, every chapter, activation. And I want everyone, if you feel comfortable, place your hand on your heart. Close your eyes and say, I am God's child. I am God's child. It's as simple as that, opening the heart space. Take time to feel it in your body as you take a few deep breaths. Practice this daily or as often as needed. And so my journey starts with that, from realizing you are eternally parented and that God is good and all our parents did the best we could. I'm a dad. I've got two beautiful daughters and I did the best I could, but I wasn't a perfect dad. But God is a perfect father, a perfect mother, a perfect brother. And so that is Christ and King and everything else. But it's realizing that we come from a family and they are wanting to parent us or bring us to a place of being eternally parented. So, yeah. So the book's all about that. And then I've got techniques. I talk about quantum physics and I talk about the observer effect and all of that because, yeah, it's just a huge conversation in the spiritual community, in the worldwide community. There are so many manifestors now and there are so many meditators. And I just feel like God as the family beyond Christianity needs to be in that conversation. And there needs to be a book. And I just wasn't finding that sort of book. And it's controversial to some people in the more religious circles. And I understand that. But I felt God dreaming in me to write this book and just download it into me. So it's been a journey. It's been a real journey.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I love what your book is about. I love that you are sharing with people how to co-create with their creator, and that this stuff isn't just for people in the spiritual community or the New Age community. This is something that even Christians can tap into, knowing that you can combine science and spirituality and faith, co-create with the divine presence within. So thank you so much for your just your beautiful energy and what you've shared with us today. I will link to your book as well in our show notes. So for anybody that is listening that wants to get their hands on Wow Now Dreaming, which is a book about dreaming and co-creating in the eternal sandpit of wonder, please get your hands on it. I know there are some great Black Friday deals at the moment with Amazon as well. You can get it at a good price. And yeah, again, David, thank you so much. Thank you for being on the show. It was such an honor to have you. I really enjoyed it. And I look forward to what you co-create with God next and what you bring to the world. And I will, of course, share one of your meditations or two in the show notes as well.
Thanks, Phoebe. It's been an absolute pleasure, and really appreciate the opportunity.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.